I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, people of the internet. Welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast, and welcome my friend Skylar Williams with Rivian Stories. I'm a big fan of Rivian Stories and really anything Rivian. I think a lot of people are. It's like the buzzword, if anything. And if you want to have someone who's pretty nerdy about all the details, this is a good person to have on. So, plus he's just a good friend that I would talk to off camera, but we thought we may as well put the record button and get our conversation on the air. So Skylar, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing great, man. And great to see you again, Jordan. It has been a while. I was excited just to catch up. So being able to talk EV, car stuff, tech stuff, I'm ready for any or all.
It's all fair game. Yeah. I should mention I'm still working to track down a Vulcan. That's where I met Skylar, was at the Vulcan. Was it their factory near Austin? Cause that's where you're based, right? Yeah.
Yep. So. I'm based in Austin. Vulcan is actually headquartered in Round Rock right now.
That's right.
And they will be moving to a new headquarters facility that's also not far from me in the town of Liberty Hill, Texas. And so I'm not sure exactly when they're going to be making that shift, but they're moving on to some property where I think the long-term plan is to have like an off-road adventure course, kind of customer experience type center, as well as their manufacturing and other operations.
We need more of that. So I'm looking forward to tracking down. For anyone who doesn't know, definitely look up a Vulcan grunt. Is that there's the runt and the grunt.
Correct. Yeah. So the current offering at the moment is the grunt, which is an electric off-road motorcycle. Oh, yeah. Cool. You pulled it up there.
Yeah. For our visual listeners, I can pull it up. For audio listeners, go look it up. Vulcan, spelled V-O-L-C-O-N. So am I even saying that right?
Yeah.
Forgetting. Okay.
Vulcan. And see, me and my Texas self at first, before I heard it said by others, I was like, Vulcan, but that's not it.
It looks like Vulcan, because when I think Vulcan, I think the spelling from Star Trek, which I'm sure a lot of people would.
Right. Vulcan. Yep.
But
like
I think, I think this thing is awesome. Can't wait to ride one. I'm just really into electric motorcycles. I mean, I've been a fan of Zero for a long time. Finally got to ride one last year, and I'm just so obsessed with that concept. I think going from a manual transmission car to a electric car, some purists are like, oh yeah, you'll miss the actual engine and transmission. But with a motorcycle, I really didn't miss shifting. I like just thinking about the throttle and the brake and nothing else. It's a bit freeing, perhaps. Maybe a bit safer too. I don't know. Less things to worry about. But then you have a lot of torque, so.
Right. And Actually, I love motorcycles. I still have the motorcycle endorsement on my license, but I have not ridden an electric motorcycle of any sort. I do have a couple of e-bikes at home, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to riding. I mean, I would love to ride the Grunt sometime just because I like nature, the outdoors, and off-road type terrain. So I think that'd be incredible.
I mean, this photo on their website reminds me of some of those towns in West Texas, where it's just dirt silos, and the most fun way to get around is a fat tire like electric motorcycle, I think. So I'm in for it. And in a couple weeks, actually, I'm going to see the new Polaris, the thing they did with Zero in partnership, the
Oh, really? So the Ranger Kinetic, I
Ranger
think, is what
Kinetic
they're calling it.
XP, I think.
Oh man, you got a spare seat on that trip? I'd love to check it out.
I'm really curious how that's going to go. There's a new guy that's working with us who actually lives really close to me, which is great. So this is kind of our inaugural trip, for me and Max to try to figure out how to work together, but also figure out what this Ranger thing is all about. Because I'm hoping to see, because I think they're already on sale, and on the website it says sold out. So.
Yeah. So I actually tried to get in to get a reservation for one of those
Oh, really?
because I have a 2015 ICE Polaris Ranger and I live on a few acres and I use it around my property all the time. I absolutely love both the utility of it and the fun of it, but the Ranger Kinetic is obviously electric, and I think it's something like 110 horsepower, and of course, crazy torque numbers. But
140, pound feet of torque, which
yeah,
I don't actually, maybe you can tell me what is a gas Ranger power wise? I never think of the Ranger as having a specific power, because it's so separate from road vehicles that I never even think about that. But I know it's still important to some people.
Yeah, and you know what? I even have the small Ranger, the 570, and I think it's like 46 or 48 horsepower, but obviously being the small motor, it's less torque. And it works for what I do. And you know, I've never been like, wow, around my property, right? I never need to go faster or really I've never really stressed it. I pull a small trailer with it. But no, I just know that the instant torque and more torque would be so much fun in one of these.
Yeah, and I don't think the range is a big deal. I mean, there's obviously a lot of people with large acreage properties, ranches, farms, but still, the small battery gets you 45 miles estimated range, which could be a bit more or less depending on speed. And if you're just putting around the ranch or the farm or something, then it's really, this will last a while, I think, for most people. And then you can get the double battery basically, which is 80 miles of range. So it's pretty cool to see Zero's technology in this. I've seen I actually saw a 1973 Porsche 911 with Zero motorcycle batteries and motors,
Oh, wow.
which was fascinating. And so it's cool to see them working with other companies, which I think is good for the other companies obviously, but also just expanding Zero's horizons a bit. I'm sure they learn a bit too, because that Porsche wasn't just like a weird hack job. They actually worked with Zero to get software developed for the car, even though it was a one-off project.
Oh,
It's
wow.
supposed to run in the Pikes Peak Hill Climb. It was supposed to be this year. They didn't have it done in time, but it's got, I think, four. It's either four batteries and eight motors, or four motors and eight batteries. I think it's eight motors.
Really? So how would you use eight motors in a four-wheel vehicle would
Yeah,
be
I
my
think it's
question.
two-wheel drive also. I think it's rear-wheel drive. Maybe they did make it all-wheel drive, but it was a weird thing where they basically, linked up the motors in a strange contraption. And it's still on the stock. It's using the stock transmission from that 1973 911. So fascinating. I'm hoping to talk to some of those guys more about the project. I saw it briefly at Concours d'Elegance, I guess a year and a half ago. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. Like, I need one more thing to go out and right? research and read about, but that does sound really cool.
There's so much to keep up with. So I wanted to talk about how I guess you and Rivian Stories came to be with Rivian stuff. I mean, when was your introduction to Rivian itself? Because, you know, nowadays there's so many EVs either on the market or coming, which means, like you said, there's so much to research that our brains are just hurting, but they're excitedly hurting, versus, you know, back when it was pretty much just Tesla and a couple small projects here and there, it was maybe easier to keep track of. Even when Rivian was unveiled, there was a lot less to keep track of. Now it's just so much. But how did that all start?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, I've been a traditional car and truck guy, and I'm actually a huge Jeep guy and have been forever. And then it was probably around 2014 when I got my first ride in a Tesla Model S, and I was just blown away from just a car appreciation standpoint, right? Obviously the big screens, but the thing that really got me was the acceleration and kind of the eerie feeling that you get with that kind of acceleration without all the noise. And literally that one ride sold me on electric just as an automotive enthusiast. And so I kept an eye on the market ever since then for something that would be more appropriate for me, mm-hmm. which is truck or SUV. And yeah. Rivian unveiled in late November of 2018, and I actually took some time to do my due diligence just because there's been so much hype. I mean, look at Faraday Future and others, and yeah. I wanted to make sure that it was something real. So I did all my nerdy research on the tech specs and kind of the design and engineering of the vehicle. But then I also went a step further and started researching, you know, the CEO specifically and what his background was and just kind of the company in general. And I put down my reservation mid-December of 2018. So a couple weeks after the reveal, I felt comfortable enough that it was a real thing to go ahead and, you know, put down my deposit.
Yeah, it is hard because it's this era of like all these companies are, especially walking around like an auto show or CES, where there's a lot of great ideas. What's real? What's hoping to be real? It's like I have a lot of respect for them just trying to be real, but it's that real question of, are they actually going to come to market? And there's always the stories about, like, I don't know if you're familiar with Elio, where it's like, 14 years after they started showing off ideas and still nothing in the hands of reservation holders or anything like that. And it's just, that's just really a little sketchy. And then there's the whole Tesla thing where it's like, sure, a lot of things are delayed, but it's still a real company that's leading the market in so many ways. And so people can be upset about things, but they're still going to be successful. But I was very excited to see, I mean, it just seeing my first Rivian in person, I was like, okay, this is becoming a reality. And when me and Kyle went to go drive it, it was like, you know, it was so hyped in our minds. We were worried about being really disappointed because that's happened a lot of just maybe, you know, the whole thing of don't meet your heroes. It's like perfect on this pedestal in your head. And then driving, it was like, oh, wait, it really is great. But like everything else, they have growing pains a little bit. Our Rivian is in the shop right now. So it's, you never know. But I think in general, I am so impressed with it being their inaugural product. It's a new company. And I don't know. I've seen companies start and then a few renditions later, it's finally a good product. Or a few styling changes later, it finally looks good. It's like, what other company has had something look as good as the Rivian R1T as their like first vehicle off the line?
Yeah, and perform as well. And yeah. I will also say this. So, and actually, I guess probably most of your audience wouldn't know this, but I just took delivery of my R1S last week at the factory in Normal. And one of the early non-employee customer deliveries.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what spec R1S did you get? What color?
So I got limestone, the light gray that looks matte from a distance, but it actually has some metal flake in it once you get up close, like in the sun. And it, like a lot of grays, it looks drastically different in different lighting scenarios. So I've had white cars for years, and I almost went white with the Rivian, but I decided to branch out and do something different. And I couldn't be happier that I did.
That's awesome. I mean, congrats. That's a big deal because I still haven't seen an R1S in person yet. I've seen some people making videos with them and stuff, but that's really cool. Which interior did you get?
The black interior.
Nice.
I'm a big fan of dark interiors. I feel very more classy, cozy and comfy in darker interiors. But nice. Of interest, Jordan, there have been R1Ss showing up at the Denver Rivian Service Center.
Yeah, I saw someone post about that, and that, yeah, I need to see if I can go see one of those. And I told our PR rep, just like, hey, as soon as we can get the R1S to do some filming with, let us know. That's awesome. So how was you picked it up from Normal and then you drove it back. How was that?
Well, the R1S was great. The charging situation, not so much. And it wasn't, so this is my first EV, mm-hmm. and obviously my first road trip in an EV. And so it was a brand new learning experience for me on what it was going to be about. And what I figured out is I don't mind stopping every couple hours to charge at all. I mean, I ended up getting more charge than I needed on the first couple of stops, just because the chargers were working great. They were ripping. I was getting plenty of juice, and but then things kind of started to go downhill. And
no,
and well, it was a charger reliability and availability issue. And I know that, you know, Kyle just put out an hour and a half long episode on why public charging sucks here in the U.S. And I totally get it now.
Yep. Yeah. So did you use mostly Electrify America, or did you stop in on Francis or anything like that as well?
So I used all Electrify America with the exception of an RV spot in a state park in Kansas. And yeah, just pulled in for the night, plugged into an RV spot, slept in the back of the R1S. So nice. Actually camped out in it. And there was one other charging stop in Kansas where it was a charge point that was supposed to, they had multiple 125 kilowatt stations.
Yep.
And I tried all of them and didn't get more than 70. But the interesting thing, and the thing that kind of surprised me, is that those stations were only 17 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, it's cheap, but it's slow.
Yeah. There's one, I don't know if people know, in downtown Colorado Springs. So it's not like out in the middle of nowhere, but downtown Colorado Springs, a parking garage, it's free from one of those charge point stations. Also says 125, but I think I got 75 when I plugged in with the Rivian.
Right.
Cause I think that's because of the load the Rivian's asking for and the amps that it can put out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think that's the limitation. but it's, yeah. So I think it's, the garage is $1 an hour and the charging was free. So I was able to charge to like, I did to like 90% or something like that. And it took an hour and a half. So I spent $2 to go from, I don't know, I think it was 20 to 90.
and actually I saw that video too. So yeah, went over to a coffee shop, got some work done and plugged. Yeah. That filled up for a couple of bucks.
Yep.
Yeah. The other thing that was pretty cool is Electrify America in Texas cannot charge by the kilowatt hour because the laws are such that only registered, regulated utility providers can charge by the kilowatt hour. So here in Texas, it's by the minute. And one of the interesting things is if you find one with the Rivian or another EV that gets good charging speeds, you pay way less than even you would pay to charge up at home. So if I'm pulling 200 kilowatts at an EA station in Texas, I'm paying like 6 or 7 cents per kilowatt hour, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, that's amazing. My friend Ahmad has that Kia EV6 in Plano. And that's, when we did the range test and charging test with his car, it was like, this is dirt cheap because it was by the minute and those things charge like a monster. But then if you pull up with like a Bolt, you're like, oh man.
So it has different rates even, and I can't remember the breakout. Top of mind, I'm going to say slower than 90 kilowatts. Mm-hmm. is one rate, which is actually lower, so it's still not a bad deal.
But then
the per minute rate, especially as a member, right? Which if you take a single road trip with EA, it makes sense to pay their $4 a month membership.
And how was the road trip, I guess, from a planning perspective? Did you use the on-route planning that the Rivian has, or did you use a better route planner, or how did that work?
Yeah, I used a better route planner. I did start to, at the beginning of the trip, I plotted it out in ABRP, but then I also put it into the Rivian nav, and they were saying different things, and I just trusted ABRP a little bit more.
Yep.
And what I ended up doing after the first stop or two is just navigating to the next charging stop through Rivian's native navigation, because it also triggers the battery preconditioning. So I used that part, but I was still planning my route, if you will, through ABRP.
Yeah. And that can be, honestly, I find it fun. I'm sure some people find it annoying, but I'm just such a planning oriented person. It's like, I think it's fun to see what the vehicle will say, what a better route planner says, compare and contrast. And then not just that, but think about, okay, which charging stops are longer and are the longer ones, or maybe even dictate which ones are longer by what's in the periphery. Like if I'm like, oh, there's a restaurant right next to that one I want to try. Or for me, it's usually a craft coffee shop.
Right.
I'll try to plan a longer stop there and do stuff, enjoy coffee or whatever. And then some shorter stops where I'm just, you know, I don't know how you felt after doing that, but I'm really enjoying the aspect of stopping and charging because I like breaks on a road trip and I like I always have stuff to do. There's always emails or even I can start and stop very quickly on video editing or whatever I'm having to do on my plate. So it's like, I find those charging stops nice reprieves, get stuff done. The car is working. I'm working.
Right. And I actually enjoyed that more than I thought I would because it gave me a minute or a few minutes to do some things that I couldn't do while driving. But I will tell you, as a first time EV road tripper, I was all kinds of nervous. And so, you know, I was using ABRP. Yeah. I was kind of using the Rivian navigation. And then I was also looking at the reviews on PlugShare to know which pedestals and connectors should hopefully work properly. And for me, it was trying to do all of those things, which I did mainly at charging stops. It seemed a little hectic and it didn't leave a lot of time for me to do other things, like check emails or, you know, non-charging stop related stuff. But I will say, you know, if I had a co-pilot, a navigator, if you will, that would have, you know, taken that stress level down just that much more and made it so much easier and more enjoyable. But it was, it was a little overwhelming, honestly, for me, especially once I started running into some of those reliability issues.
Yeah. Now that makes sense. It'll be fun to do. You know, I can't wait to see it at some point. Hoping I can come down there, or if you ever road trip it up here, it'd be cool to, I don't know, get a full tour, do a video. And I love doing the videos of, you know, they don't have to have a set time frame, but it could be like 6 months with this or how many thousands of miles with this, because it's fun to see the contrast of what you felt right when you got it versus, you know, obviously as an owner, you start picking apart the things that are way better than you thought, things you didn't realize you would appreciate, and also things that are like, I hope they fix this or change this with software, because we're in that magical time frame, time period where if you have an issue with your car, they could fix it just remotely, which is magic.
And so a couple comments there, and first is just regarding the OTAs. Even though I didn't have my vehicle, I've been watching very closely everything that Rivian has released OTA and just what they've done so far and the cadence. I mean, there's basically a major release a month, more or less, and they have fixed so much and added so much over really a short period of time that it's pretty incredible. The other thing that I want to touch on real quick, because we were able to have lunch with both the COO who came from Magna and Mercedes-Benz before that, and also the head of manufacturing, and they talked about both the throughput and the quality improvements that they've been able to make in the vehicles in, once again, a relatively short period of time. And the vehicles that are coming off the manufacturing line right now are significantly more consistent than what they were doing early on, which really is to be expected, but they've made a lot of progress. I think even between the truck that you guys have and the R1S that I picked up last week.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, the biggest glaring thing and the only really consistent thing I've seen with R1T is seems to be the tonneau covers. And you obviously don't have that problem with the R1S. So I imagine it, and I can only imagine how nice it feels, because the cab in the Rivian feels so nice, high quality, exactly how I'd want it designed. My only like minor complaint, it's cool, but it's kind of a gimmick to me, is the changing the air vent flow on the screen. I would prefer the manual.
Well, and I am a proponent of hard knobs and buttons for commonly used items and like hard controls on the vents as an example.
Yep.
I totally agree with you there. I feel like technology is great up to a point, but still I would love to have hard knobs and buttons for certain things, even if they are software programmable, if that makes sense. So within the context of what you're trying to do in the vehicle, if you're on a certain menu, then, you know, be able to use a knob instead of trying to poke the right spot on a touchscreen, especially while you're driving.
Yeah, Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It's some things they can fix with software, some things like that. That's not a software thing. It just wasn't designed with that in mind, but it's a small quibble, if you will, of like, I'll take it because look what else you get.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is very, very minor in the overall scheme of things.
Yeah,
for sure.
And as so the R1S, like that huge panoramic glass roof, how do you like it? And what does your family think? Like how's the reception been of those in your peripherals?
Oh man, the kids absolutely love it. So we've never had a vehicle with a third row before.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids love the third row. And maybe that's something just new and novel that'll wear off after a while. But I got back to Texas on Friday and I went to go and pick my dad up and take him for a ride on Saturday. My oldest daughter came with me. So, you know, the second row was completely empty, yet, you know, I was driving and my daughter is back in the third row. And then, you know, dad jumps in shotgun once I picked him up. But
yeah, that's so
kinda
cool.
Kind of funny. Yeah.
So how did Rivian Stories and all that come about? I mean, I'm guessing it probably started around the time it was unveiled, or was it a bit later on once you realized it was a real thing?
No, so it was a bit later, and it's actually just kind of crazy and coincidental how how we all came together. So one of the guys, Jimmy, I had known for a while online and then met him in person right before COVID. February of 2020, when Rivian came to the Fully Charged Live event in Austin.
That's right. Yeah.
So that was my first time to see a Rivian in person, which was super cool and special to me. They had both the truck and the SUV there. Mm-hmm. Got to meet Jimmy. And so, and golly, I can't even remember when it was that we met Kyle, but long story short, everybody wanted to know what their order numbers were.
Yep.
And what number they were for their pre-orders, for their reservations. I happened to be the one that figured out how to find it and find your order number and kind of shared that online with people. And then I started collecting all the data and analyzing the data about, what pre-orders came in when, and, you know, had a guy that did projections based on, you know, what Rivian was saying from when deliveries were going to start. So we tried to project out from what your order number was to when you'd get your vehicle. And anyway, so I ended up hooking up with Kyle Schultz, who started Rivian Stories, just him as himself.
Mm-hmm.
And reached out to him and said, hey man, if you want to talk about this, I think it'd be of interest to people. And yeah, talked to Kyle and then said, he was like, hey, is there anybody else that knows a lot about Rivian that might want to do this? I'm like, yeah, Jimmy. So we all got together on a Zoom one day and then decided that, yeah, we'd just go on YouTube and talk about Rivian stuff, because Jimmy and I, without a doubt, both hung on every little minuscule piece of information out there possible.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
that's awesome. I mean, that's great. That's how the best, I think, things start. It's just, you're kind of like, wow, how did this actually come together?
Right.
But then having a fun backstory and obviously being all enthusiast, it makes it easier. So I think it's cool. I think your content's great. And I think it's like, for me, it's like the go-to place. Like when I hear someone mentioning or see a tweet about a Rivian thing popping up, I'm usually like, okay, what's Rivian Stories saying about it? And then I'll go find it's usually you guys talking about it. And I, you know, you've talked to a lot of like actual people at Rivian. And so it's, you know, it's not just all speculation. It's like, you've got data and you've got the enthusiasm and the technology mindset behind it, which is cool. And so I think it's awesome to see that, and glad you finally got your Rivian too. I feel like for a while it's like you're doing all this legwork of the hype and the excitement, and it's so personal to you. And so I'm sure you were kind of met with a wave of emotion when you picked that thing up.
Oh, without a doubt, man. And matter of fact, like the days leading up to going there for delivery, I felt super weird. I'm like, you know, I've been so highly anticipating this for so long.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just felt strange because it was actually happening. And I really don't know how to describe it. It was just really weird. I was excited, but then on the other hand, it's like, well, wait a second. All of this kind of pent up energy and excitement that I've had for so long, like,
yep,
I'm actually going to have it. Will I still have that excitement after I get it? I don't know. But I do. I do, by the way.
That's good. And it's cool to see everyone else enjoying it too. And by the way, Rivian Stories is like the best place for people to find you there is that like Rivian. I know RivianStories.com. That's a website. And you have a like a RSS feed and YouTube channel, of course. And a cool shop.
Yeah.
That pulled up on the screen.
Yep. So... And that was kind of funny, and that was born a little bit out of necessity too, because Rivian didn't have their gear shop up for the longest time, and people wanted Rivian stuff. And we were like, hey, we need to do something so that people can get Rivian stuff. And so that's how the shop came about. And we actually had early on a couple really cool designs that were like sketches of the vehicles. And we promptly got notifications from Rivian Legal that we needed to take those down. And that kind of sucked because we were filling a gap and you know, we were trying to do everything the right way. And we even said, hey, can we like license something so that everything's on the up and up? But then, you know, in Facebook groups and forums, there's people, you know, hawking stuff like using Rivian's name, logo, the whole deal. And the guys that are trying to do everything the right way, you know, we kind of get our wrists slapped a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard and frustrating, but... Yeah, glad you at least have stuff.
Yes, yeah, we got some stuff. So we've got the logo that's made out of keyboard characters that kind of depicts the front of the truck, and yeah, so that's cool. But the biggest thing for me along this journey, honestly, has been getting to meet virtually and in person all the other Rivian enthusiasts. Like Kyle and Jimmy are literally some of my best friends now, and you know, so many other cool people that are a part of this community. And you know, it started for me on the forums, and now over at RivianStories.com we do have our own community site. And just because I don't have enough time to be everywhere, that's where I spend most of my time interacting with people and posting pictures. And the other cool thing that's starting to happen now that there's more vehicles out there is we're starting to see more local clubs and people going and actually doing things in their vehicles, which it's exciting to see, you know, people are making those real world connections, and it's awesome. The people are the best part of, you know, being a part of this for me. Yeah.
That's amazing. And it's cool to see them pop up. And I've been reassured. I mean, I was driving our Rivian around Boulder a couple weeks ago, and in one Sunday morning, I saw five different Rivians in five different colors around Boulder. And they were all public owned trucks. None of them were manufacturer or anything. Like, you know, for a while it was like, oh cool, a testing mule, like that's so cool. And it's like, oh, I saw actual owners. It's funny because they're almost all around Boulder, which is I think the Boulder stereotypes fit the Rivians so well. It's like, I'm glad to see people in Boulder with the Rivians. And I feel like it's a lot of like people who had Volvos and had Range Rovers and they're
Subarus. Late. Man, yeah. lots of Subaru people, man, for real.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But it was so cool and reassuring because I'm driving around and I see Rivian. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I wave and their enthusiastic wave back to me was like, oh, cool. Rivians have a wave. Because to some people, a vehicle is a vehicle. I get it. It's a tool. It's from point A to point B or your workhorse or whatever. But I feel like at least the early adopters are enthusiasts and excited about what they got and excited to see other people get it and share that enthusiasm with each other. So I'm not surprised to see groups and clubs forming like crazy.
Absolutely. And I've been a member of the Jeep community for many years now, and I'm still a big Jeep guy. Matter of fact, you've seen one of my Jeeps, the one
the white Jeep on what, 35s, 37s? What's it on?
37s, yeah. And that's actually my wife's daily driver. And that's so cool. She loves it too. But I see a lot of parallels between the Rivian community and the Jeep community. I mean, the love for the outdoors and having a vehicle that can go out and take you there. And then also just the camaraderie. And it's honestly, it's just a bunch of cool people. I mean, yeah. I haven't met a Rivian owner yet where I was like, God, what a punk, you know? I mean, yeah. everybody's cool. So
that's great. Well, I mean, it's really great to have you on, and like, I feel like we could talk forever. Have to head out here in a second, but you know, we'll just have to do more podcasts because there's in between electric vehicles and technology. I mean, the sky's the limit. And
dude, I definitely want to catch back up with you after you have the chance to drive the Ranger Kinetic.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll be able to drive an ICE version.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of compare and contrast between the two. I don't know whether that's on the agenda, but I'd ask.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I'm really excited about, we were talking about Vulcan earlier, but Vulcan is coming out with a little bit more sport oriented electric UTV. And just within the last couple of weeks, they announced that they're partnering with GM for the drivetrain, so the battery and drivetrain components, and
so it's like a big Ultium cousin.
I think that is going to be really cool and really fun to watch. And matter of fact, the electric off-road motorcycles and UTVs is a space that I've got my eye on to really see what's coming next for sure.
Yeah. I'm hoping to cover that more and more, and who knows, you know, knowing Kyle, we may just start another channel to cover that because you always need another channel, but for now I'm going to try to get some of that stuff on Out of Spec Reviews and Out of Spec Overlanding, because I am so fascinated by the electric motorcycle space and subsequently, which is kind of a Venn diagram, like the electric off-road vehicle space, whether small or large. I mean, like you said, the Rivian, maybe some of the parallel of Rivian and Jeep owners, like being so enthusiastic is, I don't know, that freedom mindset of, wow, I could take this anywhere. Like, I choose to stay on the roads, but I don't have to.
Right. No, absolutely. That's part of it, without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Skyler. And everyone go check out Rivian Stories, see everything they're doing on YouTube and just all the fun forums and people hanging out, and we'll see Skylar back on the show soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Instagram's a fun one, and I'm not a big Instagram guy, but Jimmy stays on top of that, and his wife Nikki, and they're posting all kinds of cool Rivian stuff all the
time. Is that at Rivian Stories? Is that the handle?
I think it may be Rivian.stories, but yeah, you should be able to find it.
Easy to find, yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on, and we'll see all of y'all very soon on another podcast.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Thanks, Jordan.